This is a CBC podcast.
Support for delivery of this podcast comes from Chevrolet. At Chevrolet, we bring people together with the things that matter to them most. Visit Chevrolet.gm.ca.
Hello, I'm Sheila Rogers. Welcome to the best of Sounds Like Canada. You're listening to our podcast of the day's highlights of Sounds Like Canada, and you can catch our full show on CBC Radio 1 at 10 o'clock or a couple of times a day on Sirius Satellite Radio 137. When Kate Cochran split up with her husband, she says she didn't want a crash-and-burn separation. I spoke with Kate a little over a year ago about the unusual living arrangement that she'd forged with her ex-husband and her children. Kate has since gone on to write a book about other divorced couples who are reconfiguring their families. It's called Reconcilable Differences. And one of the people profiled in the book is Megan Brown, who connected with Kate after hearing Kate on Sounds Like Canada. Kate Cochran is also a radio producer for the Sunday edition. She's in our Toronto studio. Good morning, Kate.
Good morning, Sheila.
And Megan Brown is in Halifax this morning. Hi, Megan.
Hi, Sheila.
Do you want to say,
Kate.
Yeah, I knew
Hi,
you.
Hi, Megan.
There you
Hi.
Go. Kate, before you talk the successful arrangement that you ultimately made in your living situation, obviously it didn't just happen like that. You liken the threshold of divorce and separation to standing at the edge of a forest fire. Can you characterize just how you were then?
I think because it's terrifying, actually, because what you've built, the world that you've built, if you have been married and have children, you have a home, you have a life. And when you stand there and look at trying to figure out how to disassemble it or dissemble it, it is terrifying. And I think I think nobody quite knows how to predict what will happen because it's new to all of us. And that was what it was like for us. Although we were never at war overtly with each other, we knew from the beginning that neither of us wanted to take each other apart. But that having been said, we had to build a new world, and building a new world is complicated.
Megan, what kind of living situation were you in when your marriage broke up?
Well, my ex-husband Mike and I had been married for about 3 years, and our marriage just sort of slowly disintegrated. There wasn't any one big thing that happened. When we initially separated, we were both very committed as parents. We did live apart for about a year and a half, and then my work situation changed, and my ex-husband, who had left Saskatchewan and had come back to Nova Scotia, he decided to come back out at my request. He decided to come back to Calgary, and he and I started sharing a house. And in the beginning, it was just going to be for a couple of months until he was settled. And gradually, it just extended, and we never even thought about him finding his own place because it worked so well for us.
It was really organic.
It was different, but it worked well for us. It worked extremely well, and the best part was that my daughter Bethan didn't have to be without either of her parents. My daughter Amy was able to still maintain a relationship and live with her stepdad, who she loved very much, and Mike and I were able to really build on a friendship, and that friendship endures to this day.
Kate, tell us about what you reconfigured as a family relationship.
Well, what we decided to do, originally we began thinking, and we knew we didn't want to be apart from the children, and so we, in other words, we both wanted ongoing contact with the kids. So we lived in a house that looked like it might be something we could divide, and we began to talk about that, dividing the house into two apartments, and we went through that entire exercise. Was very useful because what we did was begin to think about how do we want to live, how do we want to build a new situation. And then a house came up for sale in the same neighborhood that had already been divided, and we decided to take a risk, and we bought a bigger house as we were splitting up. And he lives in an apartment upstairs, I live downstairs, and in fact in this house there are several units. So we have four families all together in this house now, and our children float between us. So Madeline has a room in my apartment. Jake has a room in his dad's apartment, and as I always say, the dog goes wherever she wants. And actually, it works really well. It's an upstairs-downstairs arrangement that gives us independence from each other. Very, very, we can separate our lives quite. You know, we'll go days and days without ever seeing each other, and then there'll be days where we'll need to cross paths often to talk about the kids, to work out whatever details need to be worked out. So, and we too have built a new friendship in the wake of what wasn't working as a marriage, and we're on better terms now than we've ever been. Actually,
it took a divorce.
Yeah, ironically, it did.
Kate, what did
I
you?
Would say,
yeah, sorry. Would go ahead, Megan.
Be,
yeah,
that would have to be the same with Mike and I as well. I think we have always said we made much better friends than we did partners, and I treasure his friendship.
Kate, your kids, what did they think about the divorce and the subsequent reshaping of your family unit?
I think they were. As every kid in every divorce, I believe, they were completely unsettled and scrambled by it. They never fell apart. They knew, and we said from the very beginning, you know, Dad and I are going to keep this family together, that we're determined to do that. And so as they saw us do that, and that we were, and when we were consistent in carrying through on what we promised, even when there were bumpy periods, and of course in any separation there are bumpy periods, they could see that we would work things out, and they began to believe in what we were doing. And so now they're great. I mean, they now can talk about it as, because they're surrounded by other kids, of course, who have gone through separations that have been not quite so comfortable or positive. And so they are able to compare what they live with, which is, an ongoing family that continues to function as a family in its own unorthodox way.
As you say, the subtitle of the book, Reconcilable Differences, Marriages End, Families Don't. Mm-hmm. So true.
Mm-hmm. It certainly is. And no matter what shape the family takes, it can be filled with rancor, but the family still exists because you still will always be the parents of those children. You may not feel very comfortable with your ex-partner, and many people don't. And it's not all cozy and comfortable. But I think if we are able to step back, give ourselves a little bit of time, and look and say, what is it? How can we build something that will work for us? My model, Megan's model, wouldn't necessarily fit other people, but each couple, I think, can figure out, if they give each other space and time, what would work for them. What kind of shape can they use? And everywhere I go now, when I talk about this book, someone inevitably will say, I know somebody who's doing it. It's a little different. People who know models that go way back, and people who are trying it now.
It's not necessarily a model encouraged by the legal system.
No, it's not. And I think it's not encouraged by any of our own notions of the kind of crash and burn that a separation or a divorce, that's what one thinks has to happen, which is why it's so frightening. And you're also in the midst of pain and disappointment and, a myriad of complicated emotions that are very hard to sort through. The world around us, and often the literature that we might seek out, will not necessarily be encouraging to us either. And I think that's what we need, is to know that it's possible to do something like Joe and I have done, like Megan has done, that it's possible to, you know, there's one couple in the book that wrote to me. She had heard me on the radio doing an interview after I wrote my first piece about what Joe and I had done. And she had heard me, and a week later, her husband, not knowing anything about this, came home and said to her that he had to tell her that he was gay. And they have two wonderful daughters. They're both devoted to their family. And she went out and got the magazine that the article originally appeared in and read it, and then eventually took it down to him and said, look, I don't want to nuke our family. Read this. Let's see what we can build. Let's try. And they are actively now rebuilding their family in the most remarkable way, with the most grace, and it's been very inspiring to me. And that's part of what my experience of doing this book, meeting people like Megan, is that it's inspiring to see what people do, and we all do it in the dark, just trying to do the best that we can.
Just a reminder, Maddie and Jake are how old now?
Well, Maddie is 15 and Jake is 19.
Okay. And the divorce or the separation started when?
But we first talked about it about 5 years ago.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And Megan, how old is your daughter?
I actually have two daughters. My daughter Amy is 32 and my daughter Bethan is 23.
How did your daughter feel when your dad moved back, her dad moved back in with you?
Well, naturally, she was very happy to have her dad back. They were very, very close together. I think I could have handled it, or Mike and I could have handled it a little bit differently. We thought that, you know, her seeing the fact that we each had our own rooms and whatnot would make it obvious to her that we were not attempting any sort of a reconciliation. And we didn't handle that as well as we could have. It was probably about 6 or 8 months later that I enrolled Bethan and I in a course offered in Calgary for children of parents who were divorcing. And I think it was once she attended that class, was able to relate to the other kids that were in the class, and I was able to relate to the other parents who were, you know, we were all trying to do what was best for our children. Then we realized that we needed to be very, very clear with her about what the family situation was. That we were still a family, but that we were no longer married. That the marriage was over. And Kate writes about this in the book, that the final night of this class that Bethan and I attended together, she actually gave me a card that said, "I'm glad that you and Daddy got divorced." So I knew then that she understood that just because the marriage was ended, that the family could still exist, and she didn't need to feel that she had to choose between mom or dad. And a lot of children, I would say probably the majority of children, don't get that opportunity. They are forced to choose between their parents and end up being a pawn or the sort of the center of a power struggle between two adults that cannot seem to put their anger and their bitterness aside. And the thing that really struck me with Kate's book and with all of the families is that we've all tried to put our children first. We've tried to deal with our own issues, but not to involve our children in those issues, to make them feel that they had to choose sides. And I'm very grateful that there are so many people out there now who are working hard to do that for their children.
So interesting that you talk about putting children first, because that is often the reason a couple will stay together when perhaps they actually should separate.
Yes, that's true.
Absolutely. And I don't think that does them any favors.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that many of the kids that I interviewed talked about. The fact that they knew that their parents were not doing very well together, and I think at the beginning they may not have understood what was happening, because how can they? They have very, you know, not much of a frame of reference. They're kids, but when they get older and look back, they can see that, as Bethan did, that, you know, you're better off in the situation you're in. And my kids tell us that now too. And that was hard for them to see in the very beginning.
Kate, how did the people around you react to this new arrangement that you made with your ex-husband, Joe?
Well, we've had a range of responses. There were, in the very early stages, when we were really doing this by ourselves, and I didn't know about anyone else who had done this, there was a range of people looking at us with astonishment, perhaps that we were nuts, that we were being foolish, that we just weren't being realistic. You know, let's deal with the real world here would be kind of a look we'd get. And we always thought that we were dealing with the real world. And luckily, between the two of us, we held on to the belief in what we were trying to accomplish. We also had very supportive family who, you know, they stepped right up for us. My family and Joe's family have never wavered in their support of this wacky arrangement we have. They were a little mystified as to how we might pull it off, I think, at the beginning. Some were, but I think everyone has come around, and they've been incredibly supportive, and that really helps, because the world out there expects other things, and there's a certain cynicism, I think. I don't know if Megan's experienced this as well. But there's a certain cynicism in the world about, yeah, right, so you're going to do that. Or almost as though it's a judgment on our part they're not being able to do it very well, some other people. And, you know, not everybody can. There have to, the circumstances have to be right. Everyone has to be, has to buy into this plan and play fair, and there's got to be an element of trust. But there, sometimes I think people think, well, you seem to think you're able to do it better than we are, which is really not what any of us are trying to do.
No, I think we're, I don't think we think we're doing it better than they are, but I think maybe what we're trying to do is do it differently than what so many people do. And our situations work for us. And like you said earlier, Kate, they may not work for everyone else, but they've worked for us. And I think it's important that people remember that when you're involved in a situation like this, when you're trying to create a new family out of an existing family or new family dynamics, that you don't have any guidelines to follow, and sometimes you're just going by the seat of your pants. You don't have a script. There isn't a book on how to do this. And so you make the best of the situation that you have, and sometimes your friends and family disbelieve, I guess would be a good word. They disbelieve that two people who could not make a marriage work can actually make a family work and not be involved romantically with each other anymore.
Megan, sorry, Kate.
I was just going to say that I think the other thing is that we feel guilty that we haven't been able to make something work. And then if you stumble along the way, which we all do as we try to reconfigure these situations, we have to forgive ourselves for and understand we're doing the best we can with the information we have at the moment. If we didn't get it quite right, let's go back, let's regroup, let's be grown up, let's think it through. It's not a failure. It may be a misstep. But let's go back and try again. And if you keep doing it that way and in good faith and without sounding too much like Pollyanna, it is a constant. That's one thing I've learned over the last 4 years is that we have to revisit and rethink and talk through what are we doing, how are we doing it. Maybe that didn't quite work. Let's try another way. And so it's a very organic process, as you said earlier.
What occurs to me is that it's funny that our communication skills with our ex-husbands or our ex-wives very often improve because of this, because we're so committed to making this new family arrangement work that our communication skills are actually better with each other than they were when we were married.
What happens when a new love comes on the scene, Megan?
Well, I guess that would depend on who the new love was.
In your case?
In my case, I fell in love with my ex-husband's brother. It's still a little awkward sometimes for me to say that. So I always like to preface that with the fact that when Mike and I were married, I had only ever met his brother once, and that was for about 15 minutes. And we lived at one end of the country, his family lived at the other end of the country, and I never knew his brother.
Okay, you don't have to justify it any further. But
okay,
what did it do to the balance of the family relationship you were recreating?
It was rocky because Bill, who is my husband now, had moved out west to sort of start over after his own marriage fell apart, and we initially just started off as friends but gradually over a period of time we realized that we really had a connection with each other. And it was difficult for Mike, although at that time we had been apart and divorced for probably 8 years. It was still difficult for him, and I think it was more difficult for him than for either Bill or I, because I do think he felt betrayed. But we kept that communication open, and as Mike says in the book, he realized that. Or he came to the view of who was he to stand in the way of our happiness, and he became one of our biggest supporters in Bill and I creating a life together, and eventually married. And Bill and I have been married now almost 9 years, and we continued to share our home with Mike up until 2.5 years ago when Bill and I moved back east to Nova Scotia.
Kate, there's a lot of generosity, a lot of bonhomie here, a lot of goodwill on display. Some people may wonder why that wasn't put into saving the marriage. What do you think?
Well, I think sometimes we find ourselves in relationships that either wear themselves out or weren't quite right. We hoped they would be. There's a million reasons why marriages begin to flag, and then they can either fall apart catastrophically, or we can look at them and say, well, what is possible here? And I think it's a great question, because I think if some of us had learned how to communicate with each other earlier, in another way, we might have been able to save a marriage. On the other hand, sometimes it's simply a recognition that new relationships can take the place of old relationships. It doesn't disqualify or diminish the previous relationship. You know, life moves on. There's a wonderful image that Pema Chodron, a wonderful writer, talks about how life is like a patchwork quilt, and you may find that, you know, what was a shirt at one point, you find in a patchwork quilt later, and it's changed and something new. And I think it's looking at life as a process of change. So if we're not angry and we don't live filled with regret, we can take what may have faded and turn it into something new. And that's what, certainly in my life, that's what that has done. I mean, I it's not easy. It's hard work, as every relationship is, every marriage is, but what we've managed to build is a new, fresh something or other. I think it's a family. The kids do, Joe does, so even the dog does. So, but you know, I think we just have to be realistic and say, this is what we are, so let's make it the best we possibly can in the circumstances we're in. And I think that's what the people in this book have done too, and I admire them for that, that's for sure.
I think this book is an enormous and great addition to the literature that is available on divorce. Kate, thank you. Megan, thanks for joining us, and it's been great to talk to you both.
Thank you, Sheila.
Kate Cochran is the author of Reconcilable Differences. It's published by Second Story Press. Megan Brown is featured in the book. If you've divorced or separated, or you're the child of divorced parents, how have you sorted out your living arrangements and what you think of as family? Send us an email to soundslikecanada@cbc.ca. That's what you're listening to on CBC Radio 1, Sirius Satellite Radio 137, or cbc.ca. That's the best of Sounds Like Canada. Highlights from our show on CBC Radio 1, heard weekday mornings at 10 o'clock. I'm Sheila Rogers. Thank you for listening.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.